Welcome to my podcast, a first Alpina medium for all employees, as well as fans and everybody who wants to become part of First Alpina in the future. This episode was translated from the German interview with AI.
Welcome to episode 26 of my podcast. Today, we're taking an exciting look behind the scenes at First Alpina, specifically at the internal control system that ensures everything runs smoothly within the group. I'm joined by Siegfried Paschinger, head of the Audit and Risk Management Department.
Good afternoon, Ms. Reim, and thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Mr. Paschinger, you are head of the Audit and Risk Management Department at First Alpina. Would you like to introduce yourself briefly?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I'd like to start with my education. I first attended the technical upper-level secondary school in Steyr, specializing in communications engineering and electronics, and then studied business informatics at Johannes Kepler University in Linz. During and after my studies, I had the opportunity to familiarize myself with First Alpina as I worked for an American company as a consultant for First Alpina in group reporting. This prompted me to join the company in the summer of 2000. I have worked in the Audit and Risk Management Department ever since and have managed it since March 2020.
What exactly does your department do? Could you give us an overview of what the terms audit and risk management actually mean?
As you can see from the description, the department is divided into two areas. In the audit department, we carry out internal audits on various topics on behalf of the management board of First Alpina. The risk management area coordinates the group's risk management activities. This is done in close collaboration with other departments, such as the sustainability department. We report directly to the management board of First Alpina on audit activities and to the CEO, Mr. Eibensteiner, and the CFO, Mr. Meyer, on risk management activities. Formally, we report to the CEO.
Since we will be discussing group internal audit, and in particular its audits of the internal control system, later on, perhaps you could first explain the risk management area to us for the sake of completeness. What are the tasks of your department in this area?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Our team coordinates group-wide risk management activities. We support the divisions and group companies in implementing the group-wide risk management process and the regular use of it. This process is carried out several times a year and helps management to identify risks early on and take appropriate measures. We also consolidate the individual risk reports into a group report at the end of each half year and at the end of the financial year, which is then submitted to the executive board and the audit committee. As risk management is a cross-functional area, we also collaborate closely with other departments, particularly the sustainability department, as mentioned previously. We regularly coordinate our activities to share new findings and developments.
The second area of responsibility is auditing. What does that involve?
In the group audit department, we provide independent and objective audit services on behalf of the management board. These services are designed to continuously improve our business processes and provide the best possible support to the companies and thus the group in achieving their goals.
I know from the group description that First Alpina has around 500 companies and locations in 50 countries across 5 continents. How much of this do you audit and at what intervals?
We generally conduct audits at companies in which we hold at least a 50% stake. That equates to around 300 relevant companies. We carry out 40 to 50 audits per financial year on a wide range of topics. This may mean that we visit the same company more often or at shorter intervals. The annual audit program is derived from a risk-oriented audit plan. This takes into account various criteria such as company size, the date of the last audit, past findings, and information received via the whistleblower hotline.
That sounds like a lot of work. How big is your team?
Our team consists of 5 people, including assistants. That might not sound like much, but we are a powerful and flexible team. Depending on the task at hand, we also collaborate with internal and external experts on specific audit topics. This is the case with IT security audits, for example. Naturally, our job involves a great deal of business travel around the world. However, we also cover some topics remotely from our desks. New technologies are very helpful in this respect. For the most part, though, we are on site at individual companies.
Let's get back to today's topic, the internal control system. In the last edition of my podcast, Mr. Meyer explained how the balance sheet is prepared. We know that trust is good, but control is better. What do you think, Mr. Paschinger? How would you describe the audit process in general and the ICS in particular?
Our various group guidelines, such as those for financial purchasing and human resources, contain binding ICS requirements. These requirements are crucial for us in topic-related audits. The internal control system within the group generally includes basic principles such as the separation of function, respectively segregation of duties, four eyes or more eyes principle, the need to know principle, transparency, traceability, and the protection of property and assets. During our audits, we check that these requirements are being met in relation to the specific topics.
We are also familiar with the safeguarding and protection of property and assets in our private lives. Can you compare the two in any way?
Yes, absolutely. We are all familiar with many controls that we carry out regularly or even daily in our personal lives. For example, we lock our flats or houses and cars, we don't share our passwords or PINs, and we check bills and credit card statements before paying them. All of these things help to protect our property and assets in our personal lives.
And how can we transfer this to the professional environment?
Very easily. Because the same principles apply in the professional environment. In our everyday working life, we also lock our offices or office buildings when we leave. We keep passwords safe and do not share them with others. We also check invoices before forwarding them to the finance department for processing and payment. For certain activities, we obtain approval from our superiors or management before starting or continuing with them. All of these measures contribute to protecting assets in the professional sphere and are an essential part of a functioning internal control system.
Are these internal controls necessary and desirable?
Both. Internal controls also ensure that we carry out necessary tasks and activities correctly. For example, internal controls serve to ensure process reliability and protect the people involved. Internal controls are important for this reason alone. They are essential. However, internal controls are mandatory. There are legal requirements and group guidelines that mandate internal controls. There is no way around it.
So we have to do that. How is the internal control system defined at Voestalpine?
According to our understanding, the internal control system encompasses all monitoring and control mechanisms that aim to minimize risks associated with business processes, prevent errors, and support companies and groups in achieving their goals as effectively as possible. However, our ICS is also designed to prevent asset losses and damage to our reputation caused by detrimental actions. The ICS contains guidelines for fulfilling accounting obligations and for properly executing business processes. This is achieved through both upstream and downstream controls integrated into the processes.
Who specifies these ICS guidelines and requirements at Voestalpine?
The ICS includes guidelines and requirements that have been approved by the management board and are binding throughout the group. All group companies must apply them in line with the decentralized structure. Group companies must also develop supplementary ICS guidelines that meet their own requirements. Group specifications and external requirements must be strictly adhered to.
And who is responsible for applying and complying with these controls?
We are all responsible for the application and compliance. The internal control system at Voestalpine covers all organizational units and hierarchical levels, as well as areas such as purchasing, sales, accounting, human resources, and production. It is also integrated into all business processes. No single department or individual is solely responsible for applying and complying with ICS regulations and requirements. ICS affects us all and must be applied and complied with by all employees and managers alike. Overall responsibility for the ICS lies with the management of the individual companies.
Perhaps we can now take a closer look at this. How is the internal control system structured in concrete terms?
We have a wide variety of guidelines within our group that shape our ICS. These include the statutes of committees and boards, rules of procedure and powers of attorney, as well as value-based approval and signing authorizations, IT authorizations, meeting and reporting structures, and much more besides. Guidelines for various areas such as compliance, finance, purchasing, HR, and risk management are also essential components of the ICS. These are supplemented by process descriptions and other specifications such as the accounting and controlling manual and the IT minimum standards. However, these are just a few examples.
And I guess there is even more?
The ICS is also supplemented by ICS basic principles and ICS cornerstones. As previously mentioned, these include the separation of functions, four eyes, more eyes principle, the need to know principle, protection of property and assets, and transparency and traceability. Together, these diverse components form the ICS within the Fürst Alpine Group.
We probably won't have enough time to go into all the details, so I'll ask you what you think is particularly important. Which ICS basic principles would you like to explain in more detail?
From my point of view, all of the basic ICS principles listed are equally important in terms of understanding the ICS. I would be happy to explain this using examples of the separation of functions, the four eyes principle, and transparency and traceability. The separation of functions means that tasks are divided up and distributed among several departments or individuals. For instance, different departments identify their requirements and pass them on to the purchasing department. The purchasing department then carries out the actual procurement in accordance with purchasing-specific guidelines, such as obtaining comparison offers. Another department, for example the warehouse, records goods receipt. Invoice verification and payment are handled by the finance department. This is a very simple explanation of the principle of separation of functions.
And how should the four eyes principle be understood?
Another important cornerstone is the four eyes principle, also known as the multi-eye principle, especially for approvals and authorizations. The multi-eye principle is especially important for approvals and authorizations. To continue with the previous example, this applies to purchase requisitions, orders, invoices, and payment requests. The aim is to involve at least one other person or several people in the respective process. In accordance with the principles of traceability and transparency, these process specifications and the activities involved must be documented in a verifiable manner.
So, as mentioned at the beginning, control is better. But what interests me, and I think our listeners too, is the need-to-know principle. You have already mentioned it several times. This term may not be familiar to everyone. What does it mean?
It is closely related to IT authorizations and access rights. We ensure that rights and access are only granted to those who need them to perform their assigned tasks. There is also a precise written procedure for requesting authorizations.
As in the private sphere, you also mentioned asset protection as one of the ICS principles in a professional context. Mr. Paschinger, how do you ensure this?
Restricted access and access authorizations contribute to this, as do value-based approvals based on the four eyes principle and the separation of functions. Inventories also contribute.
Finally, Mr. Paschinger, I would like to ask you how internal control systems are implemented and who is responsible for them. How do Fürst Alpine employees worldwide know how to act and which guidelines apply to their department?
Overall, the management of the individual group companies is responsible for implementing a functioning internal control system. The companies and their departments are responsible for ensuring that employees are familiar with the relevant group guidelines and ICS requirements and that they are applied accordingly on site. ICS awareness trainings were also carried out at the end of the last financial year. Supplementary monitoring in SAP is available for selected business processes and IT authorizations. ICS compliance is also checked by the group's internal audit department.
That's a good point. I'd like to discuss that in more detail. How would my podcast listeners imagine an audit on the subject of ICS?
As mentioned previously, ICS audits focus on compliance with group guidelines and ICS requirements. Such audits relate to areas such as finance, purchasing, and human resources, and whether applicable ICS requirements and provisions are implemented in company-specific processes and procedures and applied in day-to-day operations. However, compliance with ICS requirements is also a key focus of audits on other topics, such as scrap and waste management or investment reviews. If any deviations are found, measures to fulfill or comply with the group requirements are defined together with the audited company.
Can you describe any aha moments in your working life where you thought, we really didn't expect that?
Yes, there are definitely moments like that. Due to the diversity of our group companies, for example, in terms of size or business model, we repeatedly encounter different or new approaches to implementing individual ICS requirements. We can then incorporate these new findings into subsequent audits. From this perspective, every audit is different, even if we have audited certain topics within the group several times before.
I have one final question. First Alpine's current campaign is called Favorite Moments. May I ask you what your favorite moment is?
That's easy. Every working day is different for us, so every day or audit is a favorite moment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Paschinger, for giving us an insight into auditing and the internal control system at First Alpine. Clearly, such a complex group needs a complex ICS to avoid surprises. As we said at the beginning, trust is good, but control is better. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rehm, for giving the podcast listeners the opportunity to take a closer look at the Audit and Risk Management Department, and in particular, the internal control system at the First Alpine Group.
Here is a summary of the three most important lessons from today's discussion for you, dear listeners. The internal control system at First Alpine encompasses all internal control activities within the group, a safety net, if you will. It supports the group in achieving its goals. All employees are responsible for this. The risk management process, which is systematically applied within the First Alpine Group, supports management in minimizing risks and deriving controls to best achieve objectives. That was episode 26 of my podcast. If you are not yet a subscriber, follow our podcast on your preferred platform. If you use Spotify, please activate the notification bell to receive a monthly reminder when a new episode is available. In episode 27 of my podcast, we will be looking at sustainability and reporting at First Alpine. We will hear from Monica Aschenbrenner, Head of Group Sustainability at First Alpine, who will talk about how she and her team completed their first integrated CSRD report. They collected countless pieces of information from across the entire group, analyzed them, and prepared them for the sustainability report. This was achieved with the support of special digital tools and platforms, as well as many employees from various companies.
First Alpine, one step ahead.
This podcast is produced by WePodIt.